Hi, this is Sherelle Dorsey from TED Tech, and this episode is brought to you by Solidigm. The world runs on data, and data relies on storage. But most businesses rarely think about how crucial that storage really is. The truth is, it's no longer just a commodity. With new demands and constraints, especially from AI, the old ways of managing data are holding innovation back. Solid-state storage from Solidigm is changing that. It helps reduce energy use, shrink physical footprints, and accelerate data at the edge, unlocking more from your AI infrastructure. Learn more at whatsthestateofyourstorage.com.
Lock the gates!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuckadelics, what's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. How are you? Yesterday, September 1st, was the 15th anniversary of WTF. Two new episodes a week, every week, for 15 fucking years. That's a hell of a track record. Brendan McDonald, my business partner and producer, is a wizard, and we've been doing this a long time without break. No matter what I'm doing, if I'm in outer space, I'd have my Zoom 6 up there, recording my intros, watching my Zoom 6 float in the air with zero gravity. No matter where I am, if I'm in a car, we have done a new show every week, twice a week. For 15 years. That is not nothing. High quality business. Happy anniversary to us. You hear me? That's what I'm saying. Today on the show, I talked to Drew Lynch. He's a comic. He's a funny guy. This was I'd never talked to him that long. Maybe I did, because he was on season 4 of Marin. He was played one of the kids who I was in rehab with. And he was very good in that, very funny. We had some funny moments. But he was a finalist on America's Got Talent back in 2015. He's a comic, obviously. His podcast is called Did I Stutter? Because that's something he's had to struggle with. And it was a good talk. He's a good guy. He's a funny guy. Very matter of fact. I didn't know how it would go, but it went very well. I'll be in Tucson, Arizona at the Rialto Theater on Friday, September 20th. Then I'm in Phoenix at the Orpheum Theater on Saturday, September 21st. Go to WTFpod.com/tour to get the dates for the shows that were rescheduled in 2025 and to get tickets for all upcoming shows. Also, I'll say it again. Use my links or make sure you're at the venue's website. Scalper sites are the first ones that are going to come up on your search for Mark Maron tickets. I do not charge $200 a ticket. I do not charge $400 a ticket. There are tickets available, I guarantee you. Go to the venue site or the link at WTFpod.com/tour so you don't get fucking ripped off. Do you understand? Are we good? Is everything okay? I don't know, man. It's very good to be home. I've got about another week or so of shooting. There's a big week. We're doing the big finish of the show. John Hamburg is directing. I got an opportunity to spend a nice flight from Vancouver with him that might not have happened. Man, the other day before yesterday, here's the interesting thing, is that when your brain is spinning the way mine does, kind of working all the possible angles, and I've talked about this before, I think that I enjoy the relief of whatever I'm worrying about, you know, not unfolding, not happening. But I don't think it's that simple. You know, life is going to strike. A lot of the things that you don't worry about, all of a sudden they blindside you. And it's sort of like, holy shit. That's the way it usually happens. Probably 80% of the shit you're freaking out about is probably not going to happen. And, you know, 20% is just, you know, being vigilant in order to be a responsible person. And then there's the deficit, which is things you don't even fucking know about, just sort of slamming into you and being like, holy fuck, I didn't see that coming. But here's a benefit of being a panicky, anxious lunatic, is when something does blindside you, you're almost ready to go. You're, you know, there's no surprise. It just wasn't on the menu. But like, I'm ready to go. And that happened the other day, and it was kind of enlightening. So here's what happens, and this is one of the reasons why I think maybe I have to reassess my whole life in terms of the way my brain works. So I'm flying back. This is on what day was it? Saturday morning. I'm flying back from Vancouver to Los Angeles on Saturday morning. This is last Saturday. On Friday, I told my manager, I said, look, the last time I flew Air Canada, they canceled all the flights the day I had to fly. And out, maybe there were two, for no reason that they explained. They said tech or whatever. And I just was like, fuck it. And we were able to get another flight, but it kind of fucks you up with it. You know, you don't have any explanation. Everything seems to be fine in the sky. How you cancel all fucking flights on a day? So I was a little nervous. And I said, do you think we should look at Delta or WestJet, because of that? And she's like, well, I don't know. Delta cancels too sometimes. Well, whatever. So I'm like, all right, fine. I'll keep the flight. But as you can hear, you know, my vigilant brain around possibilities of fucked up things, you know, occurring or things unexpected. Yeah, I had that in my brain. So I go to bed early. I shoot Friday night, get it together. I'm packed. I had packed Friday because I thought there was an outside chance I'd get out Friday. And I just need to get home to ground my fucking head so I don't just float off. Just, you know, it's everything's going good. All right. It's good. Everything's fine. And by the way, that movie I'm in, The Order, where I play Alan Berg, the Denver radio personality, was shot down by a domestic terror organization called The Order. With Jude Law, it seems like it did all right at Venice. So maybe you guys will get a chance to see that. I'm not in the movie much, but I thought it did a good job. So anyway, I go to bed Friday with that thing about Air Canada in my head, but I've been sort of eased my mind a bit after I talked to my manager. But the deal was I was supposed to get up. I was going to get up at 6. I had a 6:45 car. I had an 8:45 flight. And that was that. And I could get home before noon and just lock into my life. So I wake up at 6 and there's a text on my phone and an email. Air Canada has canceled your flight because of staffing issues. And they put me on another flight at like 6:30 in the afternoon. And I've only got a few days that I can be home. Now, I know, look, this doesn't sound like a big deal. But, you know, you get it in your head. I just got to get home. And you want to get home. And I woke up and it's canceled. And I was like, fuck. You know, deep fuck. All the way down fuck. All comes from up beneath, comes from deep down, that fuck. And I'm like, I can't do it. I cannot stay another 12 hours here. I can't. Who knows what will happen in my brain in 12 hours. So in that moment, it's 6:05 and I'm like, God damn it. I get on the Delta website. You know, I try to get on a flight, see if that flight's available. Cause I know John Hamburg, the director, he told me he was flying back on that. And I put it in my head and I'm pumping through and it takes me to WestJet cause it's a co-operating. Now I'm at WestJet and, you know, it looks like I can get on that flight. They want me to ask me if I can upgrade to premium. I'm like, fuck yeah. So I upgrade and it looks like I got the seat, had to do some business on the app to, you know, cause it's international, which I always think I've already done that business. So I get on the flight. Now I've got a car coming at 6:45 and time is running out because that's an 8 o'clock flight. So I call the guy who's picking me up because I've got his number from a notification. I said, where you at, dude? How quick can you get here? He said, I can be there in 10 minutes. I'm like, let's do it, man. I had a fucking switch flight and just boom, boom, boom. I'm on the plane. And in that moment where I made those decisions out of fear of being basically in my head for 12 hours. Okay, and well, why don't you just go out? You go out to eat. It's not that big a deal. It was a big deal. It was fucking life or death. Everything's fucking like, this got to happen. It's not going to happen. And I just lock in. And within, you know, four minutes, you know, I troubleshot it. I got the flight and I was just lucky enough to get on the flight. And it was like, holy shit. I couldn't believe it. I felt like I needed an award. But in that moment of panic, in that moment of crisis where I needed to resolve that and get on another plane, I thought, like, this is amazing. I'm good at this. Good at what? Crisis? Yeah, kind of. Maybe that's what I should be doing. Maybe I missed my life's calling. Maybe I should be a guy that goes through crises for other people. What is that called? A therapist? I don't know what it's called, but I was so engaged And, you know, I know it doesn't sound like a big deal. I just tried to get on another flight, but it worked out. So I'm like, I am a hero of me today. I get to the airport. I get home. There's a problem. Friend of mine's got a problem at his house. He thought it might have been, you know, the intruders, but it sounded like raccoons. And, you know, and I was like, you know, I'm being a detective on the plane. A little of that. Resolve that. Man. So that was like two things where I'm like, I'm a good crisis guy. Yeah, I mean, I figured that out. Look, if nothing valuable is stolen, then it was probably an animal or something. Crisis guy. I figured it out. This is what I should be doing. Now, if I could just stop the crisis in my brain, the ones that don't exist from happening, and then, like, it's just a series of events. I get home, I hang out, see my cats, you know, I engage with them, I see Kit. You know, we go to dinner, ate too much Indian food. Badmash. If you're Los Angeles, Badmash, Baadmash. That's the shiz. All right? I go there regularly. Me and Stahl go there. So we go see the new Aliens movie. And after I, you know, sit there panicking about this or that. So we watched a movie. It's good. It's satisfying. It's a satisfying alien movie. You know, it's like, you know, you see a lot of the monsters and then you see a new monster. I don't want to spoil anything. That's all I'll give you. I don't know if I spoiled anything. Whatever. It's satisfying. So we're over at the Brand at the Americana and we leave and we're talking about the movie and we're almost to the parking lot and some guy starts yelling behind us. Hey, wait. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening? And this guy, just a guy in the movie theater, comes up to me with my phone. He says, is this yours? I'm like, holy shit, it is. He just saw me get up and saw where I was sitting and then ran after me. It was like 5 minutes. He found me and gave me my phone. And I was like, this is a great day. This is the best day of my life, I think. Because I'm only home for a few days. I had such a great morning of, you know, crisis management and you know, using my panic in a good way. And, you know, just being ready to engage with the insanity. And if that phone did not get, if I had gotten home and I didn't have my phone, it would have ruined every day. It would have ruined the entire day I was home. The whole weekend would have been fucking garbage. It would have just put a shadow over everything of all the good heroic things that happened that day. Solving a robbery, getting the flight, all of it would have been erased if that phone would have been gone. Thanks to that guy, just being a good guy. And I walked away going like, should I give him a prize? Does that guy, should I give him money? Should I give him like, you know, figure out who he is and, send a gift? That's crazy thinking. Not really, but it was just a guy doing a decent thing. How is that surprising? Why do I think that's like, you know, you should probably, you know, buy him a house? This is like, that's what, yeah, it feels good enough just to deliver the goods when you do a good thing for somebody. I think. Yeah, maybe I'll hear from him. Hey, dude, you know, I helped you out the other day. Nah. It was just like, I was so appreciative. Holy fuck. When you lose your phone, that's a bad feeling. Isn't it? All right, enough. So look, Drew Lynch is here. He's got tour dates coming up in the fall. You can check out where he'll be at drewlynch.com. Good guy, funny guy. This is me talking to Drew Lynch.
Hi, this is Sherelle Dorsey from TED Tech, and this episode is brought to you by Solidigm. The world runs on data, and data relies on storage. But most businesses rarely think about how crucial that storage really is. The truth is, it's no longer just a commodity. With new demands and constraints, especially from AI, the old ways of managing data are holding innovation back. Solid-state storage from Solidigm is changing that. It helps reduce energy use, shrink physical footprints, and accelerate data at the edge, unlocking more from your AI infrastructure. Learn more at whatsthestateofyourstorage.com.
So I'm sorry you came into this rat shit.
Hey, I heard
phenomenon.
I heard the whole thing. And
what, me telling the cleaning lady if I asked her if she smelled a dead rodent?
It felt like a conversation I shouldn't have heard. And I want to be honest about the fact that I heard it.
I know this is your private life, Mark.
I got there just too early.
And I'm traveling today. I don't know, like, how are you with the traveling?
I'm getting better. I used to have really, really bad anxiety with all of it. I used to, those early flights where you would have a same day gig. I would drink. I would get those little mini bar.
Yeah.
Like little vodka, little really cheap vodka, and I would just pound those on the way to the airport. I would get a ride to the airport.
Yeah.
Literally drink and drive. But I would, on the way to the airport, I would drink just because I was just such a nervous flyer. The whole process of how's it going to be received? What's the gig? Where is it at?
Yeah.
All of it.
Yeah, and also just the stress of, like, wondering if you're going to make it.
Yeah.
That's the fucking worst. But I don't know, like, once I'm surprised at my age, which is fucking old now. I don't know,
I can't advocate for you to talk to yourself this way.
Well, I appreciate that. But, like, how am I still freaked out about it? Yeah, that's, like, what always gets me. It's like, I've been doing this my whole life. No. But when I got to travel, on the day I got to travel, like today, it's like all of a sudden I'm just walking around my house and my girlfriend saw a rat on the fucking front yard the other day. And I'm like, that means it's downstairs. And usually I put out those horrible traps mm-hmm. with the peanut butter and then you got to deal with the fucking dead rat. and now, like, the day I'm leaving, I go downstairs and I can't even tell you how much rat shit is down there. I can't even begin to explain the explosion of rat shit in my basement. Like, it's been going on for a while. I don't even know how many are down there. And now I got to leave today. So I'm just going to carry that with me. Like, from now on, like, unless I do something about it today, I could put those traps out. But then those fucking dead rats are going to sit there for as long as it takes for me to get back.
Yeah, and when you come back, you have a dead rat problem.
At least
right
one.
Right now, you have a rat problem.
I have a rat shit problem. Oh, my God. It's astounding. I've never seen anything like it. But, like, I don't know what, whatever.
How is it that when you see a rat in the yard, you would know that it's in the basement? It's just because they need, like, it's inhabitable to be out in the yard? Like, there's no such thing as, like, a rat in the yard?
Not really. I mean, if there's a rat in the yard, you know, they're living somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay. And if it's my yard,
yeah,
having known that there have been rats that have kind of hung out in my basement before—
Yeah.
Why not assume?
Yeah, I see how you logic your way back to that conclusion.
But I hadn't gone down to the basement in weeks because I've been away.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of like, what if there's got to be a fucking party of rats down there.
This is what we were talking about. This is why I don't know that I can get a house. There's just so much. For how much we travel, like, it just feels like the apartment lifestyle is so much lower stakes. And it just feel there's no attachment to whatever happens.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, just call a manager of some kind. Yeah,
you call a guy. You call a guy who's better at being a man than you are, and then...
Well, that's not always the case, but it's their job.
Speaking for me, yeah.
It's their job to be a man, whether it's better than you or not. Their job is to deal. I'm not great when I got to pick up a dead rat. I fucking freak out.
Yeah, that's nobody's going to be at their best.
And, like, I throw away the trap and everything, and they're reusable. I'm like, I don't give a fuck. I'm gonna get a shovel. Gonna load this whole package into a bag and run it outside.
You're not even reusing them. Wow, that's nuts.
Well, they're not that expensive, but but if I were like a guy who did that frequently, I'd just like unclip the giant clip, drop the dead fucking rat into a fucking bag, and get on with it.
Yeah,
that's not who I am. I'm the guy who sees the rat and goes, "Oh God," and then. And then tries to maneuver as if it's going to come back to life. Fuck it, dude. I got to relax and just know.
You got a kerchief. You got forehead sweat. I want to be as low stakes to this as I possibly can. I want to make sure.
I don't have a kerchief on.
Yeah, I want to ask you questions.
I got,
that's how
I have a little forehead
that's how bad
sweat.
I feel about it.
Because I ate oatmeal this morning in 90 degrees. I've got oatmeal sweats and rat panic. That's what's that. Those are the first two cuts of my new record. Opening cuts, oatmeal sweats, and rat panic. It's a great new record by Mark Maron.
Everything is just such a turbulent plot with you, Mark. Like, every time you just get right into it, it's the worst. Everything's just the worst.
All I wanted to do today, like I was trying to think, like, what haven't I done since that I wanted to get done since I'm home for a few days? And I needed to oil my boots, which seems like a real low on the list thing.
Sure.
But I get that shit in my head. And I'm like, I'm going to be oiling boots this morning.
Yeah.
And I did that. And now I've got a whole other, now I got a rag. I thought I was free and clear. But now my house is sitting on basically a mound of rat shit. God damn it. So what have you been doing? Your life is good?
It is. Yeah, it is good. I hate saying that it's good when you see comics on the scene because you're just like, to what level of good? You know, are they saying like professionally good or are they saying personally good?
Yeah.
And I just, you try to connect with comics on the scene just as human beings. And you just try to be like, you know, it's everything is good. And then every answer that you give might be loaded. It might be like, well, how does that, for them. Yes, not for you. For them. And so
you just watch their coolness, you know, kind of melt into resentment.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of, I think that's a lot of what goes around. I think we're just kind of like always just
children.
Kind of comparing. Yeah. Yeah.
We're fucking high school kids.
Yeah. It's all, you never grow out of it. I thought you would think that you grow out of it. And then you get back to doing comedy and you're like, I'm back in high school.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm actually starting to sort of feel the aging out a little bit. Like I've whatever I've earned in my life, that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, I'm not fighting, but I still have that. Like, who the fuck's this guy?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, you've got your thing. You've worked to this level and here you are. Stop, you know, try to get out of high school, try to graduate.
Mm-hmm.
But,
do you think that you've gotten closer to peace because of that?
No, I've gotten closer to, I guess there's a sort of peace in resignation.
Sure.
You know, I don't know mentally if I'm that much different other than I do really acknowledge my age. Like mm-hmm. I've talked about this before. There was a period there I thought we were all contemporaries and we mm-hmm. kind of are. Mm-hmm. But then I turned 60 and COVID happens and all of a sudden I'm at this age and I'm looking at other people's ages. And I'm like, why aren't they getting older? Mm-hmm. Well, I thought we were all kind of
right in the same.
And then I realized, like,
class.
I'm two generations away from you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think when you did my show, Marin, what were you, 12?
That was what, 8 years ago? So I was 24, 25.
It's crazy. It's
I
crazy.
I felt young when I did it for sure.
Well, you were supposed to be kind of young.
Yeah, I was, but I just mean I just felt young just in the environment.
Yeah,
I felt
so it worked out. Like,
yeah, I guess.
It was funny.
Yeah.
I told you the other day at the Comedy Store that I ended up watching an episode of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that episode where we do the field trip.
Yeah.
You know, from the rehab.
Yeah.
You and the coffee.
Yeah.
You know? It was funny.
I loved it. I loved it. I mean, I loved watching the whole process of you working on it too, because, you know, you're vacillating between actor and writer and you're every time you'd hop off a set, you're on your phone talking about, you know, I gotta go to Helium in Philly and I gotta fucking do this thing. Like you are. And I was just like, oh, he's either in character always or this is who he is always.
Well, I mean, I think the character was a little amplified.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Elevated, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, because you're writing it. But, like, did anyone watch that show? Did you get any feedback on it?
Yeah, I did. I, you know what's funny? It's like comedy fans, they'll say that one. That's the one that they'll say. They'll, you know.
Oh, yeah?
If any of the stuff that, you know, I've done, that'll be the one. And that's the one I kind of feel really... You know, I feel proud about Conan when that happened.
Sure.
Comics watch Conan. I mean, I was so much more nervous to do Conan than I was to do America's Got Talent, because America's Got Talent is like families and whatever. There's a story component to when I was on that season. And but comics watch Conan, comics watch Marin. There were so many comics when that show was going on that, you know, they were like, I love the show, I like Marin's stand up, I like to see it translate to the show format. So when I know that somebody has watched that show, I know that they're like comedy, you know, they're comedy
fanatics. Yeah, well, that's nice. I have no sense of it. When did you do Conan? Was he was it when he was on television?
Yeah, 2007. Yeah, what's television?
I don't know if it's evolved. I don't know what it is. I don't know if anybody watches anything.
Yeah,
like Marin, I was ahead on the of the curve on not being watched because I was just on like a basic cable network.
IFC.
IFC that yeah, people yeah. are like, I don't, do I get that? I don't even know if I get that. I don't even know. I
Does
don't
anyone even, get IFC?
I don't know. I don't know who gets what anymore. I don't know what exists. I have no idea.
I don't know how to get IFC. When you said that you saw episodes of Marin, I was like, how? How did
well,
you see
I
Marin?
Think it was on iTunes.
Oh,
I think
okay,
you can get
okay.
all the seasons. Oh, okay, I probably okay. had to pay to rent it. Maybe it was on Amazon Prime. I'm not sure where it is anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so sad.
Yeah.
Like people are like, do you have DVDs? I'm like, no, I don't even know if they exist. I don't even know if you can watch all the seasons everywhere.
Yeah.
And that was a show that has my name on it. It did four seasons.
Yeah.
I have no idea where it's at. I do know that I should check in with my manager every so often to go you know, to go see if I got money somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Am I getting any money for that?
Yeah, I hope so.
How long have you been doing comedy, though, now?
I've been doing it for 13 years.
Yeah.
They just had the name day at the Comedy Store the other day.
I saw that. You know, with my first, I saw a picture. I was scrolling through Instagram, and there was a cake with the Comedy Store names on it. And this is to speak to our high school thing.
Yeah.
I didn't know what it was or what it was for. And I'm looking at the cake. I'm like, why'd they pick those fucking names? And it turns out... It turns out it was actually the new people on the wall that they were celebrating. But I'm like, how did they all make the cut for the cake? Yeah, I mean, I'm on the wall, and all I thought was like, what? What? What a weird fucking bunch of names.
I've never seen any of these names.
Yeah. Well, I knew them all, but I'm like, I'm on, why didn't I make the cake? And it's like, oh, it's for the new people on the cake. So... This is ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Oh, man.
I'm fucked up.
You kill me, dude.
I'm fucked up.
I know.
Okay.
There's not much different from you and many just of everyone's relatives. The only difference is that you're not in front of the TV all day. That's it.
What do you mean relative?
I just mean you just go from, I think you're at like a resting seven, and then you go right to it. Like, you know, you wake up being like, there better not be fucking rats. And then there is one. And then now it goes from eight to, like, I think you go from seven to 10, and then at your resting heart rate is like seven.
But you know, it's weird. My resting heart rate is phenomenally low.
Really?
Yes.
You would never, ever think that.
No blood pressure issues.
Good for you.
My resting heart rate is like 55.
That's great.
And slight cholesterol issues. So whatever's going on is all mental. And it's not...
I love that you work through it. You talk your way through it, and then you just say, so I have that fucking thing now.
Well, I got to learn how to, like, just, you know, like right now, like... What can I do about that rat shit now? Like, all I can do is, I can't clean it up because it's a fucking shit show down there, literally.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to have to come, someone's going to have to do that. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
I could put those traps up. That's what I could do.
Sure.
And also, for some reason, the downstairs smoke alarm now needs a battery that I don't know if I have. So these are the things that are happening. I feel like if I do have one of those batteries, it's out here somewhere. But let's get back to you.
So sorry. It was a cool thing. And it just
did. Everyone show
my parents showed up, and the reason
for the
that
cake,
for the signing and the cake and all the thing. And
they didn't have a ceremony when I did it. It's just like one day, Duncan Trussell said, "It's taken care of.
It's done."
Yeah, and I'm like, "Where is it?" And the point, I'm like, "Oh, it's pretty good." Fucking ceremony, you goddamn star in Hollywood fame or something.
Well, I hated it. Like, I hated it.
Did everyone come? Was Bobby Kelly there?
No, I think they had a few different. I think they had a few names. Like, I think, like, I don't think Schultz was there, and
Sadiq was there,
and Sadiq was there.
Yeah.
And then Bobby Kelly wasn't there, but his name was
Rory Kilmartin,
and Lori. Yeah, she wasn't there, and Rory wasn't there either. But they also had all the planes that were grounded over the weekend from.
So what was the ceremony? Stuff. Did you?
It was like they just did. They did like a unveiling of like they unveiled the names. The names were already painted, but they unveiled it.
Oh.
But,
so they were covered, so no one knew exactly their placement until the covering came off?
Yeah, I was late for that part, too. I kind of missed that part.
How's your placement? Who's surrounding you?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I don't even remember because I don't want it to be, like, I don't know. I really, vanity brings out such an ugly side of, like, anybody, but I run away from it because it makes me, you know, even I had my parents in town, and they don't understand what's going on. They don't understand the significance, really. They know that it is a big deal, maybe, for some of us, but they don't understand the significance of how it translates. And and it brings out just this vain side of me where I have to be like I don't want to do, I don't want to explain it, and I don't even want to necessarily like stand in front of it and post. You know, I like I'm. It's
you didn't win an Oscar.
Yeah. It's like I'm proud of what happened, and that's great. But yeah. But I know how many other comics are like that's what they want or that's what they're grinding towards. I know so many other comedians who are also, you know, very deserving of it, of course. And so I'm trying to. So they're just like, oh, so my parents are just so like, oh, so it's anybody who can, so it's a lot of people. And they're like, I thought it was just you. And I was like, no, there's a lot of friends who do it too.
So your parents are actually a little disappointed.
It's a little that.
But you're thankful that it's not just you.
I mean, yeah, I am. If it was just that, then I would have been miserable. I'm glad that there were other people and there was a crowd.
Yeah.
But it
sounds like you spend a lot of time thinking about like what other comics are thinking about you.
I have for a really long time.
Why? Because you got breaks early?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Actually, I mean, only things that I realized, like if I had gone back and done it again, I would have done more systematic sort of like go through the levels. And,
yeah, but does that exist anymore? I mean, it doesn't even feel like that kind of pattern exists anymore. Sort of like, you know, start as an opener and then go to as a middle.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like it exists anymore. I see people that are terrible.
Yeah.
Throwing videos up. I'm like, what are you even doing?
Yeah, that's true. There is no infrastructure. But I at least started at a time where it was like the tail end of like, this is what you do.
Right.
You know, you go up, you work on the thing, you rework it, you record it, you write it, you edit.
Yeah.
And so much respect for something like that. There is a bit of a school to that. There is a bit of an infrastructure to something like that that I appreciate.
Yeah.
And so the reason that, you know, my parents being there was so significant, but so double-edged was just like, you know, at the beginning of this year, my dad got diagnosed with stage 4 brain cancer, and he and I bonded over comedy for a really long time prior to me even wanting to be a stand-up. I think I told you when I first did your show, all I ever wanted to do was act. I had this injury that caused me to stutter, and it messed with all my motor skills and everything, and it just threw the trajectory way out of whack, way off the path. And so I really came into this space watching you guys, just being like, these guys are comics. These guys are like, this is their holy grounds.
Yeah.
You know, this is the way that they approach what it is that they do. And I really kind of tried to navigate not just the art form, but the social sort of infrastructure of comedy, just kind of coming into it off of a fluke, you know?
Well, so how's your dad doing?
He's doing well. He's, you know, he's doing like an experimental drug. I feel like every person with cancer is doing an experimental drug.
Always.
But he's doing an experimental thing. And but I told Emily over at the store, you know, when she told me that I got to audition. I mean, I hadn't even gotten past yet, but she told me that I got to audition. I just said, you know, it was just a few days earlier is when I had gotten the news about my dad.
Oh my God.
So it was just, I told her, you know, I was just like, it's just, you know, sometimes it feels like the universe like abuses you and then buys you flowers, you know? So that was just kind of the vibe at that time, you know?
Thank God the flowers come.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes they don't. Lots of times they don't, but well, you know that.
We don't have to ruin a good thing.
No, of course. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Don't fuck it up with flowers. So he's doing well.
And your mom's still around?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Brothers, sisters?
Yeah. They weren't there, but they are. I do have a brother. I do have a sister. They all live in Indiana and in the Midwest. So there's so much about being out here, even in the 2 days that they were out here.
Yeah.
They've never been out here.
Really?
But at the same time together. No.
Oh, they're not together?
No, they are, but I just mean they've never been out here together. Oh. Like I've had my dad at the place and then my mom at the place.
Yeah.
But it is, like I was saying, it can bring out just such a, like, there's just such a little pride, there's a pride thing that I'm trying to always keep in check and try to always tamp down and let go of about ushering your parents around town and just saying, "Well, this is what this means." They're not understanding the significance of like a ceremony, or they're not understanding you just don't know. There's something about showing your parents around.
Well, how'd they feel about you doing stand up?
Well, they were nervous because that was shortly after, you know, when I started to do stand-up, it was shortly after my injury. So,
oh, my God. So, wait, this injury didn't happen when you were a kid?
No. This happened when I was 20.
All right. So, you grew up what part of Indiana?
I grew up in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were just like, what? Like, Indianapolis is an okay town.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you—
Midwest vibes, yeah.
So, you make it through high— were you an athlete in high school?
No. Nothing? I was a theater kid.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was really, really bad at sports. And so then I started doing plays and reading, and like I read obsessively. Neil Simon, Shakespeare.
Did you do musicals and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, I
so
did the whole
real
thing.
Real theater kid.
Yeah, real theater kid.
And that was sort of what you wanted to do?
Of course. I mean, when I was bad at sports and then I kind of found theater, I mean, I went to a performing arts middle school and high school in Vegas. So my parents moved out. From Indiana to Vegas.
To Vegas?
Yeah, yeah. To do like an air conditioning company, and so they were working with my grandfather at the time.
It was his company.
It was his company
in Vegas.
Yeah,
that's an important thing in Vegas.
Yes. Air conditioning. You definitely need that. Yeah. The heating was like a much smaller font, but it was air conditioning and heating.
But you did high school in Vegas?
Yeah, I did high school in Vegas. I went to a performing arts middle school.
One other guy from Vegas who worked there.
Who, yeah? Who?
Baron Vaughn.
Oh, I know Baron.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a Vegas guy, I think.
Yeah, and then there's James Adomian as well.
Is he a Vegas guy?
Yeah, he went to the same high school that I did. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not same time, but same high school.
But what was, like, did the actual, like, reality of Vegas have any impact on your life? Because, I mean, it seems like people who grow up there, they're like, yeah, the strip's over there. Where our life is here.
It is that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not a whole—I mean, I think there's a lot of glitz to when you tell somebody that you grew up in Vegas.
Yeah.
And they kind of—
But they don't realize it's a sprawl.
Yeah.
And you can just see the strip over there. Yeah. But when you're in high school, you guys go see shows and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I grew up, like, around a lot of, like, nudity and degenerates and gamblers and people who grew up around—
In high school?
Yeah. 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 Not to mention the people on the strip. No, I just mean.
You saw those people? You were aware of it?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, that's why I rarely gamble. And
I hate going to that place.
Yeah. I mean, I as a sober person, like, because I only drink during the summer, and then during the year is when I'm sober. It's a weird thing.
Yeah.
But that's what I do.
Who devised that system?
Me.
Yeah, why?
I don't tour during the summertime, so I just kind of want to be a little bit of a person.
But when you drink, are you like, I'm doing it? I'm like, it makes it sound like, yeah, man, by the time summer comes around, I need one.
It's like a diet. It's a little bit like a diet. But
so during the summer, you're just shit-faced?
I'm not shit-faced,
like, should I be thankful you made it out of bed this morning? Jesus, that Drew, man. It's amazing he got up that early. It's summer, you know. This is his time.
No, I just...
That's good. At least got some discipline
some
in your
system,
life.
Yeah. Just some system that needs to be in
but
place.
But how close were you to the strip growing up?
I don't know. Like 20 minutes. In Vegas, you're 20 minutes from everywhere.
Sure. So when you see degenerates, nudity, and everything else, it was just... Where was that?
That was on the strip.
Yeah,
but it was on the strip. But, like, you know, when I was in daycares, they would do like field trips to the so all the cool stuff, even for kids, like bowling alleys are through casinos, movies are through casinos.
Oh, right.
You know, they got like the Shark Reef, they had like the Mirage Zoo and stuff like that. All these cool.
But
things
it's all
that
to bring
there.
In gamblers, not to and yeah. their kids, not to bring in the local kids
exactly
for field trips.
Yeah, exactly.
So you got to walk by showgirls.
Yeah, you got to walk and the guys
cigarettes.
The guys flipping the cards. You know what I mean? First like nudie card that I saw. I was really really young.
Nudie card.
Yeah.
Where was the guy flipping a nudie card?
Yeah,
sounds like
on the
he shouldn't be around the kids.
Yeah, definitely not, but they don't care.
Like, oh, so they parents. Were doing, oh, just
yeah, like
running.
The kids, the guys on the streets who are outside the casinos all the time flipping the things.
Yeah.
They got those little, like, they got those little scratch-offs on top of the nipples of the girls or whatever.
Yeah, these are those childhood memories.
Yeah, yeah. So that was what Vegas was, and then I knocked out my first year of college in high school because, and so then I just decided to take like a year off. So I was like, I'm not going to go to college that first year. And then in the first year of living out here is when I, you know, I landed an agent and a manager. And
so
I
wait, so how'd you get the agent manager? Was that after America's Got Talent?
No. That was no.
All right, so you didn't, you took a year off school.
After high school, I graduated.
Right.
And I with AP classes and credits, I already got rid of my first year of college in high school. So I was like, I'm just going to take that year to just move out to LA.
How'd you get an agent?
Through an acting class that I took. I had a friend recommend me from the acting class.
Out here?
She was like, yeah. And she was like,
what one was that?
His name's Adam Marcus.
Uh-huh.
He directs like mostly horror films.
Yeah. How was that for you? So you came out here, didn't know nothing about it, got an apartment and took Adam Marcus's acting class on the recommendation of some guy you knew.
I booked a student film. From that student film, there was an actor on that set who said, hey, I take this class. From that class, I found this guy. Inside of that class, there was a girl who recommended her manager to me. I got connected through that man to that manager, and then from that manager, I got an agent. So it was really, really like that thing, that
Are you
thing,
still
that
with
thing,
these
that
reps?
Thing. No. They dropped me. They dropped me after I got injured, after my fucking softball injury.
The fuck happened? So you're on your way. You got, you know, you at least feel like you're doing something out here.
Yeah, I did.
And you weren't doing stand up yet.
No.
Just
I tried it one time, and I was like, that's not for me.
Where was that?
Flappers.
Yeah. Like, what year was that? I mean, I don't even remember.
2011.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that place has even been around that long.
Yeah, that was the first job that I got here because it was the perfect night job. I could just have my days free to audition and then, you know, go work nights.
What were you doing there?
I worked the door.
That was just by you just found that job. You had no interest in doing comedy necessarily?
I love being around comedy.
So you're watching Flappers comics.
Yeah. I'm not going to talk shit.
I'm just saying.
I just mean like I just loved the fact that it was a new comedy club that just opened.
Yeah.
You know, Burbank was kind of near where I lived. And so my dad and I were having dinner at the Black Angus Steakhouse right across the street. And then we saw that the comedy club just recently opened. I walked in there actually for improv classes.
Okay.
That's why. And she's like, well, do you want a job there? And so.
So now you're watching comics.
Yeah. So now I'm watching comics.
And you're like, I could do that.
Yeah. Well, no. Like I literally tried it one time. I didn't have a good set at all. And then I was like, well, that's okay. You know, I love the environment. You know, comedy's just adjacent to like, you know, acting and performing.
Sure. Of
and
course.
Stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it. Yeah.
So that was kind of how.
Did you meet comics?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I, you know, and some bigger comics too.
Oh no, they all go there. I wasn't being condescending.
No,
sure.
No.
Yeah.
I just mean like some bigger comics as far as like when I worked the door, like, you know, I would see these guys and I'd be like, wow, you know what I mean? Like this, you know, this was like, you know, Nate Bargatze would walk in before, you know, Nate was Nate Bargatze.
Sure.
And there were just some people that I genuinely loved comedy as a viewer.
Sure.
And so.
And you and your dad liked it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it wasn't really until Flappers had a softball team. I played on that softball team. I got injured.
What happened?
I took a bad grounder to the throat and I had hit my head on the fucking ground.
Oh, my Jesus Christ. Those ground balls, dude.
Yeah. Well. I mean, I grew up doing sports before I decided I didn't want to do them anymore. So I thought getting myself back involved in a
softball's like social thing.
Yeah, there's a comic softball league right now.
Yeah.
So, you know.
No one ever calls me.
Yeah. Wait, would you want to play?
I'm going to go hit a ball. You back in the field?
Yeah, I was in the field.
But
yeah,
you're back.
I'm not. I don't want to play. Someone asked me and I was like, I'm not.
Yeah, right.
I'm okay. Yeah. fool me once. Yeah.
So you get hit in the throat, you go down.
It hit my head. Well, the brain injury was the more significant of the two injuries.
So what happens?
I just had a vocal contusion from the softball to the throat. But the TBI that I had that went untreated.
What's TBI?
Which was a traumatic brain injury that I had at the time, which went untreated and unsupervised. And
you didn't know you had it?
No.
So you went down. Did you black out?
I don't remember anything until the next day. My roommate drove me to the hospital the next day. My parents flew out from Vegas to see me in the hospital. and I remembered only just being in the hospital the next day. But apparently, I had gone back to work, and then from there, they sent me home. And then when my roommate saw me the next day, I was disoriented. My speech was off. My motor skills, everything was just foggy. So I remember the hospital visit that and being in the hospital that week.
So well, what unfolds? So like, you know, the next day, you're fucked up.
Yeah.
And then what do? Go back to the hospital?
No, they had me stay in the hospital.
Back to the hospital. So you got the injury.
When my roommate drove me to the hospital, yes. I stayed there for a week.
Okay.
My parents flew out. And
okay,
saw me,
got it.
You know, and then what they told me was, because they ran CAT scans, yeah. They ran MRIs, they did the whole thing. And they told me that... that my speech should return. My speech should return and make a full recovery. But the diagnosis was a major concussion with a minor vocal contusion.
Okay.
And
so they were wrong?
I guess so. Yeah. Because I saw a neurologist years later who was like, this went completely untreated. You didn't heal your brain properly, and I had to do the keto diet for a year, get rid of all fats and sugars to try and heal the bruising on my brain, rehabilitate myself with physical therapy.
All right, so you like a year later, it's not going away.
Yeah,
and that's when you go to another neurologist.
No. I went to a neurologist just a few years ago. I was doing speech therapy at that time. So my speech only made tons of progress probably in the past few years. And that's just because of the, you know, a lot of...
Oh, my God. So this happens, and now
I'm not trying to dump all this on you. I just want to, you know.
Are you familiar with this show?
Yeah, I am familiar. I just, I don't know. I don't want to bum you out.
You're not bumming me out, because it's sort of like, you know, it's hard to imagine, you know, things happen to people. You know, one way or the other, that sort of redefines their entire life for better or for worse, in terms of what you have to adapt to, live with, or transcend or not.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is after you got out of the hospital, you had a massive stutter.
Yeah.
And so at that point, you're like, how the fuck am I going to audition? How am I going
to
do anything?
Oh, yeah. I had to have my roommate make calls on my behalf to my reps, and they told me, well, they basically dropped me. They kind of like... informally said, you know, you can come back when you get better. And then I wasn't better for, you know, 10 years. So when
do you start doing comedy? I mean, what were you doing in these 10 years? I mean, that's when you...
Yeah, yeah. In within that first year, I was on stage talking about it. I had a friend who said...
With the stutter.
Yeah. I had a friend who said, just go up there and just talk about it. Just make jokes about it. Be self-deprecating about it. And the first mic I remember I did, I wasn't like strong as far as like from a joke standpoint.
Yeah, sure.
But I will say I remember feeling that there was empathy in the room. And it was a mic. So again, you know, empathy is a thing that's strained from all comics. So the fact that I think so many comedians who had seen me over the year and a half, 2 years that I worked there, the fact that they had seen me, you know, they knew my relationship is like, oh, well, he's a door guy. He says hi. He's not a comic, but, you know, whatever.
Sure.
So I think many of them had heard what had happened. And so the fact that, you know, I was on stage just talking about it, that felt like... It felt like I was human again, and it felt like I wasn't a victim of the circumstance. I wasn't just stuck.
It was like taking control of your life somehow.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
I mean, how close were you to like fuck this? Like once the injury happened, your reps dropped you. You know, you knew what it was like to have a completely normal. Mm-hmm. Sort of relationship with the world.
Yeah.
And now like everything like you set out to do is like kind of gone.
Yeah.
Like were you on the edge of like, I'm going to go back to Vegas or maybe I'll work in air conditioning? Or
it never crossed my mind.
Okay.
It never did.
That's good.
I mean, my whole life I grew up just with this one goal in mind.
Yeah.
And
to
act. And I just loved it. When that was cut and stopped, it just kind of felt like there's no way that was the end of it. There was just no way that to me could be what the end of the story was. What a sad fucking story. There's not, it's not even a story. That's just like, sure. That, like in my mind, and maybe it was just ego. Maybe it was just like, I just can't, like I refuse. But for whatever reason, I just had this thing happen and I was like, all right, all the other options are done. I can't work at a different job. I guess I could be that slow ticket taker. Then that's my life forever. Or I will try to take some, you know, it literally just someone just came up to me and was just like, you should just go on, just talk about it on stage, you know? And at that moment, you're so vulnerable. You're just looking for any sign to just be like, I can't be in this spot. I have all this energy and I feel stuck. So any sort of flyer someone hands you, you're going to take a deep look at. You're going to take a second look at.
So when you go on stage that first time, what happens?
I don't even remember what I talked about, Mark. I just know, I just know I was trying to make a joke about people coming in and giving me their name, because you got to take everybody's name in the database and stuff.
So you're still a door guy.
You know, yeah, I'm still a door guy. I was a door guy there for a few years my injury.
When does the stuttering become funny?
Jeez, I don't know if it ever was.
No, but I mean, they're like, because you're of your self-ownership of it, and that it's integrated into who you are. I mean, I've seen your stand-up. There is a timing to the stutter that has a unique rhythm to it.
Yeah.
And you must be aware of that at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I try to, now I go on stage and it's very minimal. So I'm very lucky in that. And I'm lucky and cursed in that, like, you know, the mold that I put a lot of stock into in putting all of my energy towards trying to control the timing of this issue is now the thing that's like, okay, well, I just have to own the fact that I'm not going to put on a stutter if I'm not stuttering. You know?
Well, I mean, so, when you worked on my show, you still had it pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
and then that only changed in the last couple of years because of the neurologist told you that.
Yeah, I saw a neurologist, and I've been going to speech therapy for years, but I really picked, I stopped going for a while because I was bitter, and I was like, and I was also just kind of like, you know, you get into that place as a comic where you're like, fuck it, you know, if that's my thing, and whatever, I'm not even going to take any effort to try and change it. And then my better judgment and other people's recommendation, I didn't go to therapy to figure out any of these
things. Yeah, because you were mad.
Yeah, yeah. And
you were learning how to use it.
Yeah. It was like, I'll never go, you know, if I have to deal with this thing, if I have to deal with the pain of just people socially judging me all the time or occasionally having a bad set because I couldn't figure out the timing of my speech and people are like, what the fuck is going on? Yeah. Or people thinking like, oh, what the fuck, is this a character or whatever?
Right.
Like, whatever. Small price to pay for the fact that I was almost just like, I'm that ticket, slow ticket taking guy forever. And that's my career. You know,
the sad story of the door.
Yeah. And I never that was my biggest fear. That was my biggest fear is like with America's Got Talent. Like, yeah, it's a great thing. It's a great platform. They tell you, they do a job, good job showcasing your story and letting you do your comedy. But I never, like, I was just always so like, I'm embarrassed because I'm just like, I don't want comics to see that and be like, oh, well, he's just a fucking guy who's got a story and that's why he's doing his thing, you know? So I put so much stock into how I was being perceived by other comedians that was what I worked so hard to combat, that narrative of just being like, all right, people would be like, oh, well, he's only successful because he stutters, or he's only funny because he stutters, or he only has a POV or a thing because he stutters. That was when I started to make that change towards, I'm going to do everything I can to try and rehabilitate it.
Right. But also though, but you were driven to write jokes. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that made you more, I don't know, competitive, but just sort of like, you know, you had to prove yourself on two levels.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah, you had this, you know, tragic hook, mm-hmm. but, you know, on the spectrum of tragic hooks, there are worse ones.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
But I imagine that when you felt the judgment of other comics diminishing you as somebody who just, you know, has this, you know, this one angle.
Yeah.
I imagine you started to really write the shit out of things.
Sure. And make jokes that had nothing to do with that. You know?
Yeah.
It slowly just became, all right, you make jokes for them up top so they know that you know that you have it.
But it's interesting, though, because when you have something like that, which is a rare thing, that you can't hide your vulnerability.
Yeah.
Because you have this flaw.
Yeah.
That, you know, you didn't ask for,
yeah,
but you have it. So in a way, in terms of, you know, getting comfortable on stage, your comfort level, once you earn it, because yeah, you can't hide yourself,
yeah,
becomes invaluable.
Yeah.
And it's something that, you know, most comics, you know, spend their whole life trying to find or avoid.
Yeah.
So it's built into you. So right, you've already got one up on a lot of people. It's like, you know, there's no layer of the onion to peel.
Right.
You know, you've been shattered by this thing.
Right.
So I'm sorry that you feel so, you're still sort of like, you have to deal with that. Yeah, I guess we all do for whatever reason.
Yeah, everybody has something that they have to.
But the judgment is, it's weird that most people are really just thinking about themselves.
Of course.
And, you know, whatever they say about any other comic, it's not that in depth.
Yeah.
And it's just this, like, kind of some dumb little thing they do to make themselves feel better or more, yeah, superior.
Yeah.
But, you know, ultimately everyone's on their own.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, 100%.
Did you ever have an experience with other comics where you had to, like, stand up for yourself like that?
Yeah, I mean, I remember the first time, not the first time, maybe the fourth or fifth, yeah, time I went into the store, someone was like, "What are you doing? This isn't Flappers." It cut me down so bad, Mark. It got me so bad. Like, I turned...
But that's like saying hi at the store. That's someone welcoming you to the comedy store.
I pivot off my foot and left. I was like, I'm not ready yet.
Wow.
Yeah.
You failed the test.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Weak. Brittle.
Yeah.
Brittle.
Yeah. And the proper response to that is like, who are you, door guy?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Was,
yeah,
it a door guy?
Yeah, no, I don't know. Mm. I don't think so. I don't think so. But that would be very door guy-esque.
Yeah, but you got to take those hits.
Yeah. No, so that was, you know, that was whatever, over 10 years ago. And then, you know, you get that little.
And here you are with your name on a cake.
Yeah, yeah.
And on the wall.
Yeah.
10 years later, you got me looking at my Instagram going, fucking Drew Lynch. I didn't even know that guy was a regular. His name's on the cake? Where's my name? No, dude. It's for the new people. I'm... That fucking guy.
He barely.
So,
I've been here for 30 years.
Yeah, yeah. And my name's on the wall. What am I even mad about? Because, yeah, I didn't get on the cake. Like, it's like,
you didn't get on a smaller edible wall.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. I can't. That's why I for years I didn't follow people on Instagram, because I just couldn't handle the constant barrage of what other people are doing.
Oh, I'm off it all the time. I have somebody on who does it on behalf for me.
Yeah, me too. But I still go look at it.
Well, that's your problem.
I know
that's
it
your
is.
Fault.
I know. It's a
you
compulsion.
Know what you did. Yeah,
yeah, I do. So you're as you kind of ease into this. So your stutter didn't get noticeably better for a decade.
Yeah.
Because of not knowing exactly what was wrong, and also your resistance to therapy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And during that time, you're a comic. Now you're doing it.
Yeah.
So when in the arc of the comedy do you get America's Got Talent? How does that unfold?
That was 3 years after I started.
Okay.
So that was really, really soon. Three years.
But that's
after
about right for a talent show.
Yeah.
It's better seeing someone like you on there than somebody who's like, this guy's been doing it for 43 years.
Yeah. I guess that's true.
Like, I used to see people on there, I'm like, wow, I didn't even know that person was still alive.
Yeah.
I think
yeah, there is that. But I guess I felt like referring back to the infrastructure that some comics kind of invent and hold to be word.
Yeah.
You know, you get your first TV slot after 10 years, you know, or 5, you know, but not 3. And then certainly you don't get all the way
to
the end.
You know what? That's weird. That's not even fucking true. And whoever told you that, like, back in the day, here we go. Like in the 80s, like, basic cable was exploding with comedy showcases. Mm-hmm. Like, you had even at the Improv, Caroline's Comedy Hour, MTV Half Hour, mm-hmm, MTV Comedy. There was, Comedy on the Road.
Yeah.
There was just, it was a cheap thing,
yeah,
for these basic cable outlets to do,
yeah,
these showcase shows. And there were many of them. And, like, I did I did Evening at the Improv, 1989, and I started working professionally as a comic in 1988. And I'd done, you know, I guess I'd been doing it since...
How long have you been doing it?
Well, I mean, I professionally since 1988, but before that, after I graduated, I was a doorman at the store 86, 87.
Okay, so
I was
3 years?
Yeah.
3 years. All right.
And I did Caroline's Comedy Hour. Yeah. I did Evening at the Improv. It was like, you could do that if you had the fucking 6-7 minutes.
Yeah.
Do it. I mean, now people just dump their guy. I mean, you had to be able to do it.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
But that's sort of a lie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I was young.
Yeah.
I was also, I was influenced, easily influenced by anything.
You sure.
Know, I, like I said, I have great respect for a lot of the, like, anybody from any class who started ahead of me. Or I always just kind of felt that level of guilt of just, you know, stumbling into a TV slot that led to many, many other TV slots.
Yeah.
That also led to, you know, being able to tour full time for forever after that. There was just an immense amount of gift.
Those are all the things you got from that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd been doing colleges for about a year or so. So I'd had about 45.
Well, yeah, but you got out there pretty quick. So yeah, the colleges, that sort of makes you build an act pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So you learned how to work clean.
Yeah, learned how to. I did a lot of clean shows.
What was the process of America's Got Talent? You made it all the way to the finals, right?
Yeah, yeah. I just got second place, so I got all the way to the end before losing the damn thing. And the thing is that I didn't care when I first got on the show, and then by the time I got to the end of the show, I cared a lot.
You're in the game.
Yeah, yeah.
And Howie liked you.
Yeah, yeah. And he was great. He was great. It was just a good influence, but. It's just interesting because...
We came in second.
Yeah, I came in second. And then
who won?
A ventriloquist. His name's Paul Zerdin.
Wonder how that guy's doing.
He's not even on the cake.
Are you sure?
I'd have to ask you.
Maybe next year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll put Paul Zerdin on the cake, piss you off next year.
Now I know, yeah. That guy, but I'm on the wall already. There's no reason for me. I just misunderstood what was happening.
No, I know.
I thought it was just a general party at the Comedy Store where there was a cake made and they randomly chose some names and it wasn't mine. That's what I thought. Because I'm up in Vancouver. I'm not doing as much comedy as I always do. So I feel like I'm fucking missing everything.
Yeah.
And I was like, I missed a cake.
Yeah.
Had nothing to do with me.
I missed the cake.
Fucking stupid. So because of America's Got Talent at that time, it had enough juice to get you bookings. And you rode that wave.
Yeah, yeah. And then I kind of diverted my energy to online stuff and building an online audience.
You did that with YouTube?
Yeah. Yeah. I had, I think...
Early 60, adapter.
60,000 subscribers at the end of America's Got Talent. And then I worked my way just doing weekly content all the time.
And what do you got now?
2.5 million.
Yeah. So that's enough to make a living.
Yeah. Yeah. So it really became like that was the time where I was like, I consider myself lucky just because early I really.
That was before TikTok.
Yeah.
And Instagram, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this was it.
This was it.
Like,
this was like YouTube.
This is.
Yeah.
If you want to focus on this, this is how you can do it.
YouTube and then Facebook, and that's pretty much it. And then you could get long form content out there.
Right.
You could get your, you know, you could get whatever it is you wanted to talk about at that time, and really kind of curate like a weekly audience who wanted to watch you. And
you're just doing observational stuff. It wasn't even a podcast, really, right?
Yeah, I had a vlog.
They call them vlogs.
Yeah, I did it with my dog. It was a show that I did.
Oh.
It had like splashy edits and
nice.
All that kind of
stuff. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So I built.
You doing that all on your own?
Yeah.
Figured it all out?
Yeah, yeah.
Look
I went
you.
And bought myself a camera. I got myself Adobe Premiere. I taught myself how to use it, which was just, you know, brutal, but it was worth it.
It
was worth it. And so then that was like, whatever, like 2 years of that or whatever. And then I get on, Conan. And then right around the Conan time is when I realized, I was like, you know, I do these vlogs and I got a lot of people showing up at my shows with their dogs. And it's like, that's cool, but I would love for people to just appreciate the you know be able to appreciate the stand-up.
Yeah.
So then that was when I just started to pivot from just being like, okay, here's the brand as like a as just my comedy.
Yeah.
You know.
Really?
So never wanted to. I hid behind another. I hid behind another gimmick. You know what I mean? I'm just so afraid.
A stuttering guy with a dog.
Yeah. I hid behind. Oh,
that was the whole therapy dog angle?
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah. I had dog vlog, and then I had a therapy dog. I had a show called Therapy Dog.
That was a self produced thing.
Yeah, an animated thing.
Oh, and what was the angle on that? Did the dog talk?
I talked to the dog. It was just me, therapy.
Okay.
And the dog had captions, like, captions above
and that got popular?
Kind of. It's a lot to produce animation, especially on a bi-weekly basis.
Yeah.
You write the thing, you cast it, you get the animated storyboard, and then you send it, and then they send you a cut.
And you didn't have any infrastructure or people working for you? It was just all you?
No, I did. Yeah, at that point I did. Like in my first year of doing like YouTube aggressively, I did most of it. Especially when you're such a control freak early on. You're
sure.
Just like I need to be able to control how this goes and is perceived or received rather.
Yeah.
And then I started to hire, I started to hire people.
So the dog thing, do you have a therapy dog still?
No, no.
Did you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. She was awesome. She was like a big part of the channel.
Yeah, and how have the dog people responded to your solo efforts?
Yeah. you got to make sacrifices sometimes.
Yeah, but is there a lot of like, bring back the dog?
It is a lot of that. A lot of that and bring back the stutter. I get a lot of both.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I get a lot of both.
Well, that's an interesting transition.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just because it I was also like, I came off of AGT in a family friendly environment.
Yeah.
And so moving that from a family friendly environment to being like, hey, here's some jokes that I might make when I'm on the road. And then it's like, okay, here's jokes that this is the way I actually think. And I want you to understand that I was in a family friendly environment, but I have things that I'm never intentionally malicious or I push the envelope in a way that's like trying to provoke or whatever. But I am not as middle of the road as some of the people on
right. You wanted
show
to, you know, like
perceive you as.
Well, that's interesting though. Like, you know, that should be a pretty good fuck you to comics that judge you. Is that like, you know, you're actively not doing the stutter on purpose?
Oh, of course.
Whether
I never
you ever
wanted
did.
To be.
Yeah,
yeah. I never wanted it to be that.
But like, that was the assumption. He's like working this thing.
Yeah.
And you just are trying to get out of it.
Yeah, 100%. Because I just never wanted it to be the thing that like defined me or that I had to have as a crutch. And so, you know, even on shows where I would, you know, even on shows where I would have shows where sometimes I was stuttering so badly I couldn't do a joke.
Yeah.
And then I would have shows where sometimes I'm not stuttering at all, but I wrote the joke about the stutter and people are like, he's joking about the fact that he stutters, but he's not stuttering.
Right.
So there's two ends of the spectrum of just like, depending on, you know, especially socially, how much of an influence that can have on the degree to which I'm stuttering. But ultimately it just came down to not giving a fuck either way.
And where the new special that's up now, how new is that?
That came out last year.
And in what's the stutter content?
None.
Oh wow.
None.
How'd it go over?
I think it went well.
Yeah.
I mean, the one before that had no stuttering content either.
That's
I had
great.
One joke up top just to address it.
Yeah.
And then I did four. It was a 40-minute thing. I did four subjects. I think I did. Dahmer vaccine. Homeless and abortion.
Uh-huh.
So just four things that I wanted to challenge myself to just be like, okay, these will be longer bits and they'll be the idea.
Get rid of all those family-oriented people.
Exactly. And so I've always kind of set quantitative goals over the years. Like in 2014, in 2013, I was like, I'm going to do 101 different stages. I just want to perform in different places. And then the next year, they're like, okay, that's great, but you got to perform up multiple times a night every night. And so then I was like, all right, well, then I'll set a goal to do 500 sets in 2014.
Yeah.
And so then from 2014 to 2015, that's when I got on TV. And that's when the muscle of just being like,
which TV, on Conan?
On AGT. AGT was 2015.
Oh, okay.
So
you really have a disciplined guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know the diet thing.
Yeah.
9 months of just being so squeaky clean.
And yeah. Then, and then like,
3 months, I'm not even a piece of shit. It's just like, I'll have a bourbon at sometimes.
Nice.
And
opportunities are coming and good.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, yeah.
What have you been, like, outside of stand-up, what shows have you been on? What have you been doing outside of Marin?
Yeah, outside of Marin. I'm trying to, everybody's trying to produce their own TV show. And so.
Really?
It's been, well, I mean, it feels like everybody's saying, like, yeah, I'm trying to pitch this thing and do this thing for my own TV show. But honestly.
Oh, put a pitch together.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And so, that's something that I've been working on, and I want it to. I just want it to be like I want to be able to get back to doing more acting. And I think I was talking with Fahim about this too. Is like
he's a funny fucker.
Yeah, Fahim's so funny. He's just like, you know, the narrative that sometimes Hollywood wants you to have.
Yeah.
is like the challenge in getting rid of. A lot of my speech issues is like that's the only adversity component that I've had in pretty much my whole life. And so for an exec, for them to be like, yeah, but you know, but maybe you lean into a little bit. And it's like, yeah, but I'm not gonna put on something that's not there right now. I'm gonna be honest about what's going on right now.
Yeah.
And I'll talk about what had happened in the past. And
sure.
If that's how you want to frame it, that's fine.
Yeah.
But talking about it as though it's an everyday thing, like occasionally I'll have an issue, but you know, it's just like they want, you know, if you're just like a, you know, stray white guy, they're just like, all right, well, there's nothing to be said for that. But if I, you know, I would like to be able to, just have it be honest, and then, and if it's a part of it, that's a nice texture, but never have it be a thing that's like, oh, this is the defining thing.
You know? Okay. Well, I mean, what are some of the shows? Did you pitch a show called Speech Therapy, where you're the guy that is helping other people with their speech things?
Oh, that's great. Let's work on this, Mark.
Are you being sarcastic?
Yeah, a little bit, but I'm being a piece of shit a little bit. I can't hail you as a genius for your first idea.
No, I just was wondering what were those ideas. If you're under pressure to deal with it, even in the past,
the fall from grace, like the quintessential, I think, story structure is like: here's a guy who's a dick, who has a fall, who's thriving and in wealth and health and success, and then has a fall from grace,
right.
And then still thinks he's better than other people and
right.
has to kind of mitigate that issue going forward.
Oh, okay.
And I was a person who thought that I was better than everybody prior to my injury. And then the injury happened. That was quite a humble pie.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of came back a little bit again, where my ego came back a little bit and was like, well, I had this thing. I suffered. I did TV.
Yeah.
I did this thing. I feel like I should be fucking, you know.
Yeah.
And it came back.
Yeah.
And even like I said, even when I did the show, like I was like, by the end of the show, I was like, I have to win it. I have to win it to validate that this all happened to me and this is why.
Yeah.
And that's been the biggest challenge is just trying to.
Self-humbling?
Yeah. To just try to navigate, because I think we're all supposed to be people who are just accepting of each other and just, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, genuinely, this is going to sound lame, and it's going to sound lame saying it to you, but like genuinely care for each other.
Yeah.
It sounds stupid and it sounds froofy, but I just mean like, I want to get to a place at which I am, that when I hear from somebody or something and they say that they're good and I ask them if they're actually good or what they're saying that they are good about, if it's professional or personal or otherwise, that I actually care about it.
Yeah.
Because I cared so much before about whatever myself and other people's thoughts about me and it got me nowhere. It got me to a place of being a stuttering, bitter, like just kind of person.
Just one of those is bad.
Yeah.
To have both.
Geez, just to be bitter as well.
And stutter.
Oh my God.
Oh,
you're telling me he's bitter too?
It takes a while to get the toxicity out of your mouth and into the world.
Gets stuck.
Yeah, yeah. It undermines your anger ability.
I can't even express it. How toxic I am. I would love to tell you how toxic I am.
So what did you, like, it sounds like you're on some sort of spiritual path.
I mean, I don't.
You married?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. When did that happen?
2 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. She's amazing. She's a big fan of yours.
Uh-huh.
And I remember when she found out that we did a show together, she told me this a few months ago. She goes, I just love his stand up. She's like, I think you guys are a lot alike. I was like, you think I'm like Marc Maron?
Yeah, immediately not taking that as a compliment.
No, I just mean like, in what way?
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like, you're curmudgeon. You start the day and you're upset. And so when you say I'm on a spiritual path, it's like, that's what I have to do. You know, we've had this conversation before, you and I, but it's just like, we're kind of always just delaying the inevitable. And it goes in and out of whatever our impulses and compulses are.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, if it's drinking this year, it's like, yeah. All right, I'm in cigars. All right, I'm really into health. I'm right. You know, I'm just moving the thing.
Yeah.
I'm moving the ottoman around the fucking living room.
Yeah,
that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's just, you know. The way that has most benefited my speech and my mental health really has just been like, yeah, I guess it's a little bit of spirituality, but I'm the exact same. Like, when you say, like, I wake up and I got the fucking rats and I got the oatmeal sweats and I have to deal with this and this lady's talking to me, I got to go do this thing.
Yeah.
You know, that is such an easy thing to embellish or just entertain.
Look, it keeps you
entertain
busy.
I need something going on. But it's also part of the culture of what we do as comedians all the time. Like, what am I going to tell you that I'm good? What am I going to tell you that I'm spiritually things are good and I'm energy's a flow and I'm gonna release it back into the, like, that's a stupid thing to say to a comedian on the patio of the store. But it's like, that to me has been the thing that is a version of that is the most freeing thing that can happen.
Yeah, I think that's if it's honest, you know. I think that's true. And you know, I have that. I'm not always freaked out. I mean, this was just a special morning. Yeah. You know, it's not every day. Do you know what I mean? Some days are just mundane. You know, I just do my things. Today, like if I showed you the basement, the amount of rat shit down there, you'd be like, oh, fuck. Well, this
I got to give Mark more credit.
I would be very upset about this too.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have to leave town. But it was great talking to you. I'm glad everything's going pretty well.
Yeah,
I believe you.
Well, thanks, buddy. I don't want you to think. Yeah, I do sound like I'm going to kill myself soon.
No, okay, good.
All right, good. I just want to make sure that I don't sound too positive.
No, the people that wake up like us are not the people that kill themselves. it's almost the opposite. We're the people that say that occasionally, but no one believes you.
Yeah.
The people that wake up and don't want to get out of bed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now that's a different thing.
Yeah, that is different.
We got to fight the world.
Yeah.
All right, man.
Thanks, buddy.
There you go. That was good. It's a good talk. Drew will be touring. You can go to drewlynch.com to check out those dates, and you can get his podcast, Did I Stutter? All right, that was good. All right, here we go. Hang out a minute.
Hi, this is Sherelle Dorsey from TED Tech, and this episode is brought to you by Solidigm. The world runs on data, and data relies on storage. But most businesses rarely think about how crucial that storage really is. The truth is, it's no longer just a commodity. With new demands and constraints, especially from AI, the old ways of managing data are holding innovation back. Solid-state storage from Solidigm is changing that. It helps reduce energy use, shrink physical footprints, and accelerate data at the edge, unlocking more from your AI infrastructure. Learn more at whatsthestateofyourstorage.com.
Because I don't know how you deal from day to day. I was panicking all morning. You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper. Thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good. That makes
that would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
Do you think this is the best work you're doing of your life right now?
That's kind of difficult, you know, because I was in the Beatles.
Why are you taking the other side of everything I say?
I'm not. I'm just saying
you
that
are.
I'm almost.
Why did you want me to do this interview if you don't think I know anything about what you're asking me about?
I'm just telling you. You're done? We were having a good conversation. Oh, come on, Gallagher.
One of the first things you said was like, I don't know what you think you're doing down there below 14th Street.
Yeah, right.
But it doesn't matter.
Right. I was trying to be helpful. and save you a few years.
And was your husband your first love?
Now that I really know what love is, I'd say yes. Hmm. But
what was the other thing?
Well,
thanks for talking to me. It was a real honor. Really fucking amazing.
Real pleasure, man. A lot of laugh.
Yeah,
and you fun. Smoked your first cigarette in 10
years. Yeah, with Keith Richards. Come on.
Those were some memorable moments from the first 15 years of WTF. Don't forget, you can listen to every episode of WTF ad-free with a WTF Plus subscription. To sign up, go to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And a reminder before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. Cat angels everywhere.